This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
From downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino, Stormy Bonantoni and Jonathan Von Tobel with you as we kick off hour two of the program. And the big news of the day that continues to develop as we go regarding the separate but related gambling investigations, where the FBI this morning led a takedown that resulted in 34 arrests across 11 different states in the U.S. today. Miami Heat guard Terry Rozier and Trailblazers head coach and Hall of Fame player Chauncey Billups at the center of the headlines with everything. Rozier, one of six individuals indicted for his involvement in a sports betting conspiracy where he either acted on or provided confidential information about players and teams to others in exchange for what is called either a flat fee or share of betting profits. Billups arrested for his role in a long-running illegal poker operation with connections to organized crime mafia families rigging high-stakes games across the country. The NBA said they're in the process still of reviewing the federal indictments and that Rozier and Billups are being placed on immediate leave from their respective teams. Rozier was not in the starting lineup for yesterday's game due to a coach's decision. So perhaps there was some knowledge of this beforehand, but the NBA has claimed that they did not know anything until this morning, as the rest of us found out.
Also, as we will go over the bets from last night, one that I did not have to sweat at all was the under in that game.
Yeah.
Holy bleep. If anybody was fixing and playing some unders in that game, you failed miserably. Holy crap.
That was, well, at least like sometimes when you're wrong about something, it's like, okay, at least it was really wrong, you know, for like whatever the thing is. Because, but I'll give you credit where credit is due. Ones where you were right, you were really right. Oh, where are you going?
Well, I was actually going to say, if you remember yesterday, one of the things I pointed out was I like this game under, but if I'm wrong, I think it's going to go way over because we're going to see a ton of threes.
Exactly.
And there's going to be a lot of variance. And sure enough, it blew through that total.
But I was just pumped. Like, you helped me be profitable yesterday because I texted you after. I was like, I'm trying to have a little fun tonight and have a sweat in the NBA.
Stressful.
What's your favorite thing so that you can give me a base leg to my parlay? I ended up playing both of your things and they hit without a sweat at all. So not even a bead of sweat down my forehead.
Unlike totally how the rest of the season will go.
Unlike how I'm sure Terry Rozier and Chauncey Billups were feeling earlier this morning, where we have had some additional statements that have come out.
Yeah, so for our audience who's just joining us, let's reiterate some of these. First off, you want to go through Terry Rozier's lawyer first. So we have this. There's a lot of text here, so you can bear with us. This is via Pablo Torre. But this does kind of give a theme of how some of the people like the NBAPA and Terry Rozier are coming about this. Quote, we have represented Terry Rozier for over a year. A long time ago, we reached out to those prosecutors to tell them we should have an open line of communication. They characterized Terry as a subject, not a target. But at 6 a.m. this morning, they called to tell me FBI agents were trying to arrest him in a hotel. It is unfortunate that instead of allowing him to self-surrender, they opted for a photo op. They wanted the misplaced glory of embarrassing a professional athlete with a perp walk. It tells you a lot about the motivations in this case. They appear to be taking the world as spectacularly incredible sources rather than relying on actual evidence of wrongdoing. Terry was cleared by the NBA. There's that statement that we were talking about here. And those prosecutors revived that non-case. Terry is not a gambler, but he's not afraid of a fight, and he looks forward to winning this fight. What's interesting, I think, if we could throw up the NBA Players Associations or the National Basketball Players Association standpoint, is they echo some of the similar language here, or at least the theme of it, which is, quote, the integrity of the game is paramount to NBA players, but so is the presumption of innocence, and both are hindered when player popularity is misused to gain attention. We will ensure our members are protected and afforded their due process rights through this process. So there is kind of, you see those similar thought processes like playing through the two statements, which, hey, this is for show. They're targeting the whatever it is. I don't know. Like, the lawyer is one thing. I don't know if the Players Association chooses this time to pick that fight. But either way, they're at least pushing back on this. And for his lawyer to say he's not even the gambler, that sounds like he is throwing out there that he is fully innocent, which is very interesting to say.
Especially considering some of the words we heard from the commissioner of police earlier today, talking about
counted
how
their money.
That Rozier and his buddies who he helped cash in on certain bets were back at the house counting their money and different things like that. But I know you said there was kind of another layer to the Chauncey Billups poker side of things that has started to develop with things you're reading online and coming out of the indictment? What have you seen?
Yeah, so that's the important part. I haven't been able to read like the whole indictment, which I'll be interested to do. I think it's like 22 pages or whatever it is. But coming out of it,
that's our homework for tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, we had to come on the air and talk to you with what we could read.
That's right. So coming out of the indictment is this interesting kind of nugget. And deal with me here. I'll be reading a little bit of text, but it starts with co-conspirator 8. An individual whose identity is known to the grand jury, a resident of Oregon, co-conspirator 8, an NBA player from approximately 1997 through 2014, and an NBA coach since at least 2021. That is Chauncey Billups. Like, I love in indictments when they do this and they give you like every possible detail. You're like, okay, like that's Chauncey Billups. We know who that is. That was his career.
We love deductive reasoning.
Yes, he's a coach, whatever. The reason why this matters is to this point, it's been slugged, and we've even said it, that Chauncey Billups is just tied to this poker thing where it's just what do they call him? The face. And then they get the fish in.
Face card.
Yeah, face card. Then they get the fish in and then they dupe him with the poker thing. But according to the indictment here, March 24, 2023, Portland Trailblazers playing the Chicago Bulls. Prior to the game, Trailblazers 32 and 40, 10 games remaining. They're out of contention. Prior to that game, co-conspirator 8, who is very likely Chauncey Billups, told the defendant, Eric Ernst, that the Trailblazers were going to be tanking to increase their odds of getting a better draft pick. Co-conspirator 8 told Ernst before the game, or before the news was publicly announced, that several of the Trailblazers' best players, including player 1, individual whose identity is known to the grand jury, would not be playing in the March 24th game. The information that the Trailblazers would be tanking, not playing player 1, not available to the public. And then prior to that game, Eric Ernst provided this non-public inside information to the defendant, Marv Fairley, so that Fairley could place fraudulent wagers on the game and share the profits with Ernst. In exchange, Fairley ultimately promised to pay Ernst at least $5,000 if the bets against the Trailblazers cashed. So, in other words, if we're right, and it seems likely that Chauncey Billups is co-conspirator 8, that does tie him.
Yes.
To the fixing of results as opposed to just the poker.
Which I did think was interesting for a number of reasons, because in a lot of the initial reports, there is talk of overlap for a couple people. Damon Jones was the only one that was kind of by name as involved in both, but we knew there were three. So with the assumption that as all of this goes down, is do we think he's one of the three? Or is he in addition to, and they just aren't naming him?
Well, what I'm more curious about, so there's that, but like with Billups in general and with this, because I was texting about this with Kelly and Zach as this came down, which was we can assume that he's part of it. Or as I responded, just to play devil's advocate, you could make the case that Billups did not willingly share that information because he wanted it to be fixed. Mm-hmm. He shared it, as we're talking about with Jones in the case of LeBron.
Right.
Just sharing it with people who he assumes to be friends, and then that information subsequently being used to fix games. So there is that, where he is still like in the realm of just the poker. Here's the thing, though. When you tie yourself up with the nefarious characters and then something like this happens, like, I know in the court of law that doesn't really hold up in terms of, sorry, man, like, you've dug your own grave here. But at least in terms of the court of public opinion, he's going to be tied to this now going forward.
And I know we keep mentioning Damon Jones. If you're not familiar with the name, former Cavs player, was an assistant coach. He was an unofficial assistant for the Los Angeles Lakers back in 2022-23 when he allegedly was involved in this portion of the scheme. He provided inside information about, per The Athletic, Jones texting one of the betting ring members before a Lakers Bucks game in February of 23, where he told people to bet Milwaukee after learning that LeBron would sit out with ankle soreness. This was before the injury report came out, and then it was a level playing field and numbers change. And you even were doing some digging, I believe, on like the odds movement that day.
So I went back to, because Wager Talk does keep, you can look back at like sports odds histories and whatnot, and they're archived, like the actual screen. You can go back to that day. And it did, it opened up 5.5. I was just curious, so I went back, opened 5.5, closed 8.5, 9. Mm-hmm. So we did see that movement. Now, obviously, that becomes part of the information that eventually we learned LeBron was not going to play in that game. But you did see that move, so you do wonder the exact timeline of when that started to happen. But just to give us a sense, for those who don't remember, it was a 5.5-point spread. Ended up closing up 8.5 or so with the news that he was going to not play. It's worth pointing out, this I don't really think has anything to do with it, but since everybody's kind of getting into the groove of things, the NCAA has released a statement as well. Because, again, for those who weren't with us earlier, those who don't know, because it was kind of buried, athletes in the NCAA starting November 1st can wager on professional sports. They did release a statement, quote, "We are grateful for federal law enforcement's efforts to stamp out illegal sports betting. And I," this is from the commissioner in the NCAA, "am proud that the NCAA continues to have the most aggressive competition integrity policies in place the association has and will continue to pursue sports betting violations using a layered integrity monitoring program for over 22,000 contests. But we still need more states, regulators, and gaming companies to help in this effort by eliminating risky prop bets to reduce opportunities for manipulation."
Yeah, as you know, my other job as a college football reporter for ESPN, we do a college football seminar prior to the year every year, and Charlie Baker is often one of those voices, or whomever in the past has been the NCAA president, very, very anti-sports betting with regard to collegiate sports. So I could see this as being one of those days where he was very happy to be able to make a statement.
I'd also say, and I think you speak for you as well here, is, again, eliminating the prop bets is not the problem. Or it's not the solution. There we go.
Prop bets
aren't the problem. Eliminating isn't the solution.
There you go. And it is worth noting, we don't have time to play the soundbite here as our time is winding down a little bit. But one of the follow-up questions as part of the briefing about the indictment and the arrests and everything that came through this morning was the U.S. attorney, Joseph Nocella, being asked if more people were going to be arrested, if that was something that was on the horizon. And he essentially said, like, it's ongoing. So we're going to see there could be more that comes out of this. As of today, it was 34 separate individuals who were arrested. Very noteworthy that Malik Beasley, who has been somebody who is under investigation for a sports gambling issue as well, has not been named, has not been arrested, but I, and that with the caveat of yet, we'll see what still might be to come with this.
And for those maybe who don't remember the context, remember that Malik Beasley was a free agent after a career year when this comes down. So he missed out on a very big opportunity to get some money, which is why not only in terms of just being named in this in the grand scheme of things matters, but for him personally it matters, considering he was set to make a life-changing amount of money.
That's it, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know if you know this. Now is the best time of year for bettors. At a regulated book. Check this out. Boomer Sportsbook, bringing you all of the action. Football, hockey, basketball. Code VSIN250 when you sign up. You get a $250 bonus. Must be 21. Get this. Terms and conditions apply and bet responsibly. Who'd have thought? We'll be right back.
Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
All right, how crazy is this that it is already week 9 of the college football season?
Yeah, how are you feeling?
I told you.
You have a better tie to this because you have to leave every Thursday or Friday.
It's I'm at like a weird point in the season right now where my body is just fatigued. You know, but this happens every year around October, early November. And then I feel like once we get to the holidays and conference championships and bowls, I get like a second wind. I wish it would come now, though. Like I need to be more energized, but I'm at kind of like my lull in the season. So hopefully I don't have weather again this week in Salt Lake City. 2 weeks ago when we were in. When we were out there for the Utah game, it was just raining cats and dogs, and I'm headed back there this week for their game against Colorado. So usually weather like is a big part of my mood, too. I need sunshine to thrive like a flower.
Really?
Yes.
I'm a big, this might surprise you, I'm a big cloudy rain guy.
That's, oh God, you're like Eeyore.
Not really, because it makes me happy. I don't just sit there like,
oh,
no,
man.
I enjoy it. I frolic.
And this week, I feel like in college football is kind of a weird week as well in terms of the game options and betting options. Do you feel that way at all?
Yeah, okay.
I wasn't going to go that far. Well, I love college football. We're still all going to be locked and loaded and watching. One beautiful part of what my schedule is like for calling college football games on ESPN is that more often than not, I do the West Coast night game. So I get to watch a good bit of college football during the day, which I really do enjoy. So there are a few I'm interested in. And I know there are a few that you specifically called out as well. So let's kind of go through some of the ones that caught our eye.
All right, you go first because I've closed the rundown on accident.
Okay, well, this might not interest a lot of people because the spread's 25.5 points.
Here we go.
But I'm a little intrigued by this UCLA-Indiana game. I know that it's been a Cinderella story for the Bruins for 3 weeks and that everybody thinks this is the week that it's going to crash down. Mm-hmm. And it probably is. But when you're giving me a team total of 13.5 points,
I don't know.
Do we not think with the way that they have changed plans offensively and that Nico Yamaliava has seemingly found his footing that we can't get 2 touchdowns?
I mean, I'm just more curious is Neuhausel, is he just like, is he constructing a mutiny here? Is he the head coach? Every time I see a clip of this team, it's him. Isn't it Skipper who's the head coach here? Look, I understand the temptation of going in on this team. Look, they have shattered expectations.
I'm not taking 25.5 points. I'm just saying team total 13.5.
Asking for
Do
2.
We not think this offense can score 2 touchdowns the way that they have changed their operation?
I mean, the case that I was going to make the case for you, I was going to, like, not that I necessarily agree, but I would say, to your point, they have shattered through expectations since everything has gone down for this team. You go back over their schedule and what we have seen from them, obviously getting the win over Penn State in the fashion that they did, in the massive letdown spot, going out to Michigan State the next week and still not only winning outright but winning comfortably, and then coming back home in a tough situation to still get a win over Maryland. Those are spots where generally in college football, like spot-wise, you would assume that you're playing against them every single time, and that just hasn't been the case. So to your point of just exceeding market expectations, they've done it to a very wide margin the last 3 weeks. Why would the assumption then not be that maybe the market's too low on them again?
Listen, I know Indiana's run defense is amazing and all of this, and they are, and they're great, and they're going to win this game at home, and they're going to win it probably by margin. But 2 touchdowns, I think we can get there. So that's one of my best bets.
So you wouldn't use UCLA in a contest?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Even with the big spread. There are actually 2 games I was looking at with big spreads. The other one I don't have a bet in.
What is it?
But I am just curious your opinion on it. Texas Tech laying like 35 or something against Oklahoma State this week. Because Oklahoma State has already been on the bad end of one of these games.
Yeah.
But Texas Tech back with a vengeance. I know Baron Morton still day to day with the injury, but I would anticipate he plays. And this Tech team is probably livid the way that they lost to ASU this past weekend, that I could see them taking out that aggression on this lesser, much, much lesser than opponent.
Yeah. I mean, I would be like lay it or nothing here,
but that's what I was trying to figure out is how do you approach it? Like, because even the team totals 45.5. So what is the way to do it? Is it a first half? Is it a first quarter? Is it a live bet? Like, how do you approach Texas Tech? Or you just lay 35?
I was going to say, what if the number, it's 37.5 now, but like, what if the number's too short? Because here's the thing.
It's going to get ugly. I think it could be bloodbath material.
Like, offense aside, this is one of the best defenses in the country taking on what is the worst offense in the country. I mean, across the board, if you look at the advanced metrics, the category in which Oklahoma State ranks the highest is third and fourth down success rate, at a whopping 117th in the country. That's their best overall metric that you can point to here for this team. So I'm not one that's thinking that this offense is really going to do that much against a team that, in this, if we're using just the same parameters of where do they rank the worst, they are the worst on, let me see this here, sorry, expected points added per pass, they are only 14th in the country. Mm. So this defense, I think, is just going to be able to suffocate the worst offense in the country, arguably. How are they going to get there? So if you were going to do it, I wouldn't be surprised if it gets ugly, if you get a big number. To your point, if there's some sort of bloodletting aspect to this, I think that's why we're up to like this 37.5, 36.5. I mean, again, 35 is a key-ish number, even though you're hitting that high. It's just that's one of those key metrics when you talk about the way this game is scored. And this market is clearly just, nope, we're 37.5 across the board.
And even from an against the spread standpoint, you look at Oklahoma State, 1-6 ATS, and they've been getting a lot of big numbers, and they've been getting torched. So, okay, let's get some of the games that you were high on. Where are you looking?
Yeah. All right, let's go to a couple of these. Let's see. Do you want to go with the big one, or do you want – well, actually, no, let's go here. All right. There's a lot of people, I think, that are very happy over the last few hours because the NBA has now taken all the spotlight away from them. First off, Kawhi's like, hell yeah. I'm not getting paid under the table. You guys aren't going to talk about that. And the other is – none of us are now talking about Bill Belichick. Pablo Torre's got a new thing to go figure out, right? Now we got to talk a little bit more about Terry Rozier and his lawyer, who we got that statement from.
Jordan Hudson catches a break this week.
And Jordan Hudson gets to host Virginia. So North Carolina taking on Virginia. I'm just wondering, just a little curious, if maybe we're at the point where the market's just a little too low on the Tar Heels. We saw that big number against Cal. As you noted when we talked about this game yesterday from Cal's perspective, what should have happened?
North Carolina should have won.
North Carolina should have won the game. And now here we are, 10.5, total 51.5. I mean, I know Virginia's a very good team, and I don't think that North Carolina would be in a position to win this game outright. But catching that key number at home with the hook, and you've kind of at least shown a little bit more fight here, and that was a tough cross-country trip to go take on that team. Now you're back at home against Virginia? Come on now.
My only thing we'll say
gonna trust Virginia to follow up on road, this huh?
is that for Virginia, coming off the Washington State game where they played so bad, I can imagine this as being like a, hey, this is a get-right opportunity for us. Prior to the Wazoo game, we had back-to-back games that went to overtime or double overtime. We need to win a game. We need to win a game in margin. And so like that, granted, mentality doesn't dictate on-field performance, but I could see that kind of being a guiding force for them and not looking over a lesser than opponent, but actually saying, hey, we really need to show who we are, especially because the ACC is wide freaking open all of a sudden.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, do you need style points? Just get to the conference championship game. Just win it. Just win, baby.
I think that if you're them, you want a little wiggle room on the road.
Okay. All right.
Just my 2 cents.
What about, I would love your 2 cents on Mississippi, Ole Miss, and Oklahoma.
This is, I mean, what do we talk about all the time? It's like the great units going against each other because Oklahoma.
Strength on strength?
Yeah, or the immovable object and
unstoppable
force. That's kind of what it feels like with Ole Miss's offense and Oklahoma's defense.
Sure.
So, I mean, you know I've been on the Ole Miss train for a while, but this was a stay-away game for me because I just couldn't get there.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, and so I'm glad you brought up the immovable object versus unstoppable force. On the other side, it's movable object versus stoppable force because
totally.
Oklahoma's offense stinks, and so does Ole Miss's defense.
Dude, the numbers since Mateer had surgery compared to who he was prior to in the season are stark.
I mean, even just for the season, I mean, I think Mateer had been kind of getting away with murder a little bit here in terms of just putting the ball in danger, kind of some of the YOLO stuff, whatever it
and
was.
And you can score at will on Ole Miss's offense, on Ole Miss's defense.
So you wonder if, like, you know, limp noodle versus limp noodle, what's going to come out here in the wash when you look at OU offensively versus Ole Miss defensively? I mean, for example, for audience, for those who don't know them off the top of their head, this is the 102nd ranked rushing offense in Oklahoma versus the 125th rushing defense in Ole Miss. It's like, what wins out there when one team can't run the ball, but the other can't stop the run? I'm very interested to see how this goes. And I was actually, it was just kind of leading me to, I know the market's kind of betting this up, but I thought under was kind of a curious play, you know, 52.5, maybe betting it under. I trust Oklahoma defensively. The offense, though, stinks. So maybe this is somewhat of a low scoring game, but wanted to throw that out there. I will for sure say, I think you would have been in agreement with me if you had a contest play. For sure, San Diego State's going to be part of that, right?
Oh, yeah. Actually, when we come up in our next segment, we kind of, we'll hit on a couple more college football games, but also our best bets for the day. I made it official. So San Diego State, -3 against Fresno State is one of the plays. And good
we will ride together.
We ride on into the sunset. As we discuss all of this stuff, though, with college football in the NFL right now, up on VSiN.com, the Opta player projections are better than ever. And with the NBA season officially tipping off, we're offering a limited time free preview of our NBA player prop projections as well. We do have an NBA doubleheader tonight that JVT will give his thoughts on that and more as we wrap things up next.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back here on Money Moves, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Stormy Bonantoni, Jonathan Von Tobel with you. Busy news day with everything that is going on off the court in the NBA. Of course, Terry Rozier and Chauncey Billups among the 34 individuals arrested this morning. But we have so much to get to in the world of actual sports betting with games upcoming. And to help us kind of dive into both layers of this, excited to have Jeff Erickson join us as he always does on a Thursday. Senior editor over at RotoWire. You can follow him on X at Jeff_Erickson. He joins us here on the Progressive Guest Line. And especially because what we do every week, Jeff, when you come on the program, is we're breaking down NFL props for Thursday Night Football, the Sunday weekly card. Like, how are you feeling about kind of the war that's been waged on props and all of the news of the day?
Well, this has been an ongoing thing, right? You know, we saw with the Raptors earlier when they had that scandal. We saw Emmanuel Clase earlier in the summer with the Cleveland Guardians, along with Luis Ortiz, the starting pitcher version. So this has been building. I think it's good that we can catch these guys. I mean, you know, that we've, you know, because it's legalized, because it's all state to state and Vegas, obviously, as well, that we have a way of catching a little bit better as opposed to offshore, as opposed to, you know, your guy on the corner or whatever, that this is a lot better way of staying on top of it. Because the gambling's going to happen. I could do away with the micro betting. I really don't need to have a bet on each pitch. I think that's silly. But here we are. And I think it's great that it got caught, but there's going to be some blowback for sure. And I wouldn't be surprised if it makes it harder for a state like California to pass any sort of legalized sports betting, considering the climate out here is already difficult enough.
All right, let's go to tonight then, Thursday night football, Vikings and Chargers. What do we have thoughts on here from a player prop standpoint? Anything?
Man, this is tough, actually. I think this is one of those games where I'm having a hard time getting a good handle on things. I will say I really like what Jordan Addison did last week against the Eagles. I think he's been looking pretty good so far since coming back. I like the over 56.5 receiving yards you can get over at DraftKings on him. I wouldn't probably go on touchdowns, as we saw with the Vikings and their red zone woes last week. You know, trying to capitalize on that and thinking you can cash in on a touchdown might be a little bit more difficult.
Looking ahead to the Sunday card, I know you always come locked and loaded with so many different angles and approaches, but we were talking earlier about all of the quarterback situations that are a little bit in flux. Obviously, yes, tonight we know Carson Wentz is going instead of J.J. McCarthy, but Jaden Daniels is going to be out on Monday. What's the status of Lamar Jackson? From your perspective, handicapping some of these games and some of the potential prop betting opportunities, how do you approach those situations on a week-to-week basis?
It's tricky. I rank it for fantasy every week, too. I have something I call the value meter, where I rank players by position for the given week. And when you don't know when certain players are going to play, it's tough. Or you're trying to handicap how they're going to do, maybe especially if it's their second game played. Like we saw with Jake Browning, looked fine against the Jaguars. Maybe a little risky, but, you know, got the production. Then it was just awful after that there. And trying to kind of guess on that is tough. Then we got the tricky Jets, who won't tell us whether it's going to be Taylor or Fields starting there. Yeah. Get every advantage I can, I guess, if you're an 0-7 team. But, you know, good for you on that. But the problem is, though, like, you can't find player props on that game as much. Like, I really, really want to go find a Mason Taylor receiving yards prop, because we talked about last week how bad the Bengals are about defending tight ends. But there's nothing out there right now. So I'm just kind of twiddling my thumbs waiting on that one there. I have a little bit of distrust on the Bengals being a favorite, but it's also really tough to kind of rely on the Jets offense to be able to do it. It's the resistible force versus the movable object in the Jets offense versus the Bengals defense.
Wow, third reference of that phrase here on the show today.
Yeah, we used that a lot when we were talking about the Ole Miss Oklahoma game last segment.
Well, yeah. All right, let's I mean, maybe this is a similar answer then, but we were just discussing, so her 49ers taking on the Houston Texans. We have a lot of injuries at the wide receiver position for Houston. Can you parse through any of this to find something for the Texans pass catchers?
You know, I liked what I saw out of Jalen Noel in the Monday night game. Now, I was on Higgins, unfortunately, in a couple of my fantasy leagues, just because we saw so many wide receivers getting knocked out. There's some gnarly lineups out there. And, you know, Noel's going to get picked up in a lot of places. His prop at BetMGM is only 30.5 yards. So see that Dalton Schultz would be someone I'd want to be on, except he was limited in practice yesterday as well. So it's tough to be on that. He had 9 catches on 10 targets last week against Seattle. I think Shanahan will, you know, and Salah will scheme it up, though, to make it really tough. I mean, the Niners pass rush, if it's anywhere as good as it was on Sunday night, we've got the sieve-like Houston offensive line, and that could be a disaster for the Texans.
Jeff Erickson, RotoWire, joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line, talking NFL props and fantasy leading into the Week 8 card. Of course, Thursday night football tonight, but a full slate of games. Too many buys for our liking when it comes to the fantasy world, but it is what it is, and we'll get some good stuff. As you kind of went through, and I know it's still early in the week, so the full prop board market isn't fully expanded yet, and it will get later on in the week. Anything you really liked that's already available or are planning to target as we get closer to Sunday?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking at that Atlanta-Miami game. Bijan Robinson's the obvious one. I think the less obvious one is Tyler Allgeier, who gets a share of carries even in a normal game flow. But if the Falcons are playing with the lead, as many tend to expect, this is a great opportunity to capitalize on him. And I know in fantasy, even he's a kind of a bi-week desperation play. He might be more than that there. 39.5 yards at FanDuel, 40.5 at DraftKings. I like that one a lot because I think he's going to get 10 plus carries. I think he's going to get his work. And Miami is just horrendous against running backs. So we want to, you know, kind of capitalize on that setup there a little bit there. And it's a there's a possibility they rally and play harder this week. They get to play indoors at least. There's also a possibility that they've done quit on Mike McDaniel too. So that could be the other option there. And if that's the case, Atlanta, who's much better at home, will have a good time.
All right, I've been singing the praises of Dave Canales and this running attack. They get statistically a very bad rush defense, but how do you think they're going to handle this two-headed monster? We were watching this on Sunday together. I mean, like, how are we not going to say, you know what, Chuba, sorry, man, but we got to go in another direction. Dowdle's our guy.
I agree. And more, at least, maybe a 60-40 split at least, something of that nature. Now, I think Chuba is the bigger threat in the pass game, and that might be one of the reasons why, and because it's kind of almost a telegraph. Hey, we got Dowdle in there. We're going to run the ball, or as opposed to we got Chuba in there. We can run or throw. I think that might be a factor there. If Carolina's playing from behind against Buffalo, then that changes the decision tree a little bit there. That's something to watch for a little bit. But, yeah, Buffalo has had a lot of big injuries on defense, and that's been hampering their ability to stop the run. But even in week one, when they were relatively healthy, Derrick Henry ran all over him. That was Henry's best game of the year. So, yeah, you want to use your running backs against Buffalo. Want to see more of Dowdle again. He's still got 90-plus yards against the Jets, so we like seeing that. I would like to see that quite a bit. I'd also, you know, in that game also, I'm kind of intrigued to see what Tet McMillan does. Doesn't have an elite corner shadowing him like he did last week in Sauce Gardner, at least before Gardner got concussed.
I didn't have anything. What? We got caught up. We were doing in-studio signals, as you do every once in a while, and I confused Stormy Bonatoni.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It was some of the things that I was I was signaling.
No, sorry. Yeah, I thought you had a follow-up, so you were going to ask another question. My bad. One game I was curious about, and I know you brought up the will-he-won't-he Tyrod Taylor or Justin Fields, but on the other side of that game for the Jets and Bengals, it's still Joe Flacco going. They are a 6.5-point favorite against the Jets, and we've gone back and forth on this game a lot because it doesn't feel like the Bengals should be that big a favorite against anybody, but it's also the Jets and they're so bad. So we're pulled in a lot of different directions. How do you see that game?
Yeah. So one thing I noticed is when Taylor was in there, the receivers were getting open a little bit more often. The deeper, or at least maybe he was seeing them. The problem was he couldn't get it to them. He was under throwing balls left and right. And it's not like Alan Lazard is going to moss somebody for a ball. You know, he could not win the battle on that flea flicker that was woefully underthrown. Next play, there's an interception in the end zone when it was to Josh Reynolds. And that's kind of the problem. Garrett Wilson hasn't practiced this week. I don't think he plays. It would be a whole lot of a different decision if it was Garrett Wilson playing, I think. This is a stay away for me on the line, on the side, and also on Survivor, by the way. Mm-hmm. The last 2 years in Circuit Survivor, I've been knocked out by the Bengals. So we're going to avoid that particular decision. We're going to go with Atlanta instead. But, this should be a cover for the Bengals. This should be their, this might be their best setup until like late in the season. So if you're so inclined, go at it there. I'm just not going to do it myself.
Oh, is it their time to shine? Who knows? Oh man, I have so much anxiety about that game. Jeff, you're awesome as always. Good luck with your bets this weekend. Thanks for joining us.
Anytime. Thanks.
Jeff Erickson, doing great work over there again. Senior editor at RotoWire. You can follow him on X at @Jeff_Erickson.
So we do have a little bit of new information. Brian Windhorst was on Rich Eisen's show, was asked about the connection now with Chauncey Billups starting to emerge in this indictment. Quote, Damon Jones, Chauncey Billups use their positions as coaches of teams to tell people who may be available. What appears to be Damian Lillard and LeBron James, potentially also Anthony Davis. I'm not 100% sure on the players. To the follow-up from Windhorst, from Eisen to Windhorst, clarify, Billups' alleged involvement goes beyond poker matches. Windhorst, quote, yes. So Billups is in both of these things.
So what we were reading into earlier was accurate. According to ESPN's Brian Windhorst.
Yeah.
That's big.
Well, and I think he's just reading into the indictment as well, but maybe he's also talking to people around. So sure, either way, it does look like Billups is not just involved in the poker scandal as it was initially presented kind of by the press conference we watched earlier today.
Well, they kept on using the phrase like...
he wasn't named as one of the defendants.
Related, but... Exactly. So we'll have a follow-up to that when we come back, as well as breaking down our best bets for the evening and JVT's thoughts on the NBA doubleheader we have coming up tonight. Don't go anywhere.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Continuing to flow through as we welcome you back to Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, all stemming from the slew of arrests this morning in both sports and gambling related indictments here. And last segment, we were talking about kind of the way that these have been split, specifically with Chauncey Billups, as though he has not been part of the sports betting element of it. He has been the face of a handful of these high stakes rigged poker games, but more and more information that is flowing out is that actually, no, it appears that he was involved in both of these, which is a pretty important development and distinction to make.
Yeah, and again, like, I want to go back and rewatch it, because they did not name him as one of the defendants when they, because specifically for those who didn't watch the press conference, they started with the two different cases. Mm-hmm. They started with the sports betting, then they went into the poker. They specifically named Billups in the poker indictment and case. And then they named the other defendants in the gambling one, but they didn't name him there. So I don't know. Like, again, I'm not a legal expert at all, so maybe there's something to that they don't have to. But clearly in the indictment that you can read through, it is very clearly Chauncey Billups, and Windhorst, of course, corroborating that by going on Eisen today.
And I know they did keep using the phrase, as I have used here on the show today, separate but related gambling investigations, which is still true. Like, these are still separate cases that are going to be tried, but there is carryover for a few people, actually. It appears Chauncey Billups to be one of them, but Damon Jones, of course, the former Cleveland Cavaliers player and former assistant coach, and another third person that has yet to be at least publicly identified by name.
Yep. So I wanted to know if you have anything, send it in. We'd love it, because obviously we're not defense attorneys or anything like that. So any good information on how indictments work, things like that, we will take at me, JVT, at Storm Bonatoni, at VSiN Live. Vinny checks in. Vinny Vincent at Deputy Vinny says defense attorneys, because we were talking about the statement from Terry Rozier's lawyers and how I mentioned thrown out there, like, they're saying he doesn't even gamble. As Vinny points out, defense attorneys get paid to cast doubt into the prosecution's case. As he puts in parentheses, lying is okay. Terry Rozier's attorneys saying that, quote, he doesn't even gamble means nothing. The fact the prosecution says they went home to count the money is very damning. So
yeah, the exact, like, final sentence or two from that statement from Rozier's lawyer was, Terry was cleared by the NBA and these prosecutors revived that non-case. Terry is not a gambler, but he is not afraid of a fight and looks forward to winning this fight. Called the arrest this morning an opportunity for a photo op.
Yeah. So again, we're waiting for more. Very interested to see and dive into this in terms of the indictment, to read a little bit more about what's going on. I mean, we're focusing on the big names, Terry Rozier and Chauncey Billups. I mean, Damon Jones looks absolutely bad and ridiculous in all of this, having his finger in each one of these pies. So we'll see if that's actually something that gets a little bit worse for him and what he's going to get charged with. And that's it. Oh, I mean, it's worth pointing out, again, we'll just say this. He's not listening. He never will. I think he's probably arrogant to an extent. He would never listen to somebody he deems lesser than, and that would probably be me. But Mike Florio, again, is talking about this, tweeting out that prediction, individual player prop bets will be made illegal by many of the states that have legalized gambling, as they should be. Look, regardless of the fact that Mike Florio makes ATS picks every single week and is sponsored by
Sportsbook,
it's the fact that, again, I will reiterate, as you have and as many in the network have, even if you go down the path of getting rid of the props, that doesn't eliminate the ability to fix daily fantasy results. Mm-hmm. That doesn't eliminate the ability to bet offshore. This is not just going to go away. And again, it was caught because it was bet into a regulated market. That matters. Mm-hmm. And it is foolish, and I think somewhat disingenuous on Florio's part, to continue to try to push your own narrative here, regardless of the facts that are present. Mm-hmm. And I think that's stupid, and it's annoying, and I think it's, I don't know, not dangerous, because that's not dangerous, but it's a ridiculous thing to try to push out there when this was caught for a very specific reason.
And again, like, the sports books being able to flag that suspicious activity, those guardrails that are in place are the reason why they're able to have this information available to them. The things that bother me about, and I guess it's Florio in this specific example, but people like Mike Florio as well, that are so combative about sports betting and the product and constantly criticizing that the leagues have their hands in the pockets of the sports books and vice versa, yada, 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 is when it's so hypocritical and you're doing it too, and you're damning sports betting and then tossing to your picks ATS presented by whomever. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think it's ill intent, and it's frustrating. Yeah.
We do have a statement from the Trailblazers. They did cancel media availability. I was actually going to get a buddy of mine who does play-by-play for the Blazers, but his show was on at the same time as ours, Danny Morang, out there. He had mentioned that they had canceled media availability. We finally get a press release from the Portland Trailblazers, exactly what you expect. Quote, we're aware of the allegations involving head coach Chauncey Billups and the Trailblazers, fully cooperating with the investigation. Billups has been placed on immediate leave. Tiago Splitter will assume head coaching duties in the interim. Any further questions should be directed to the NBA.
Good to know. We've obviously discussed this topic at length throughout the course of the last 2 hours. We played a lot of sound bites from the press briefing earlier, from everyone speaking on the indictments, from the U.S. attorney to the police commissioner, all of those folks. If you did miss any of it and you want to hear some of JVT's and my opinions on it, you can always download our podcast as soon as it's done. The Money Moves podcast, wherever you get them, Spotify, Apple, all of that stuff. Also, Follow the Money is coming up next. Mitch and Paul will certainly be discussing this topic as well. Last few minutes, you want to do our best bets for the day?
Wherever you get Paul to the futures as well.
God,
does I didn't mention today.
Every time we mention a podcast, does that have to be brought up?
It's got to be. Got to pay the bills.
He was criticizing me, by the way, for doing a read that will play in some of our podcasts when you had the audacity to say you don't even have a podcast. We do.
Oh, yeah.
We do.
I thought you were going to mention something else. Yeah.
Oh, what else? I mean, you're critical of me for many things.
No, I mean, I readily admit I got irritated today because you were recording like a billion promos and I was like, we have to get ready for a show. An important one at that.
It was.
But it wasn't your fault. The criticism wasn't directed at you.
It was one promo I read twice. So that seems a little melodramatic. That said, let's get to the best bets. Yesterday for the show, pretty good day. You went 4-2 in the NBA. I went 1-1, so slightly down, but still up on the season. 11-6 for the NHL picks. Both of us up for the season all together, which is great to see. How are you feeling about the NBA tonight? We do have a doubleheader. Anything you ended up playing?
So, all right. I was texting our buddy Chris Becerra about this yesterday. There is not much statistical backing here. Okay. There's two games. There's not much going on. And I feel like it's worth trying this out. Indiana is playing Oklahoma City tonight. It is obviously a rematch of the NBA Finals, as we saw just a few short months ago. Oklahoma City, coming off of the double overtime win in primetime against Houston, now has to hit the road to take on a team that's licking its chops for revenge. You're going on the road in a big, emotionally charged spot. Obviously, we all remember what happened in Game 7. If there was a spot this year that is better for Indiana, I would love to be shown for it. This is a pure psychological, situational, let's just throw this out there and see if they can do it. Wes Reynolds does this a lot. He'll probably have actual data if you want to hit him up at Wes Reynolds 1. But the early season angle in the NBA, the playoff revenge angle, playing on teams that were eliminated or playing against the team that eliminated them in the preseason, the postseason prior, it's kind of a little bit of a revenge spot. You get charged up for it, whatever it is. So that falls into that category as well. So let's do it. Indiana plus 7.5 at home against Oklahoma City. We also do know, and it's worth pointing out.
Go ahead. I do love that you said, let's do it, because that's exactly what you said about a half an hour ago as you were going through and like, okay, I'm going to put this in the best bets folder. You go, let's do it.
Yeah, that's right. But yes, that, and we should also note, of course, no Jalen Williams. Alex Caruso is not playing tonight, concussion protocol. Lugan Storts was on the injury report, but he is going to play. So it's just kind of a thin team, tough situation. Let's go Pacers.
We both also have made it official.
Yep.
The San Diego State Aztecs -3 at Fresno State. It's going to happen.
Not at the snap, but yeah, San Diego State -3 is also on the card. We're riding in unison. So if your alma mater lets us down, we blame you.
SDSU Aztecs fight. Mm-hmm. They're not going to let us down. I feel like I normally, you know, when we're going back and forth specifically about my teams, I'm usually like not the biggest fan of them or their situations. I really like SDSU this week. So is that actually concerning to an extent that I am so confident in them?
No, I think all of that is irrelevant.
Okay, I just think they're a good breakdown of significantly better team.
I would say I've had a pretty good read on the Indianapolis Colts throughout the year, have I not?
You have. That's a fair point. I am also going to roll with that UCLA team total that we mentioned earlier, just to follow up with the college football theme against Indiana. I know Indiana's defense is as good as they are. I know a lot of people think that the Cinderella story is going to run out and they turn into a pumpkin this week. Maybe they do, but I still think they should be able to score 14 points in this one. Slight juice at -125, but I like the over 13.5 points for UCLA. And then for Thursday night football, JVT thinks it's disgusting, but I'm taking the Minnesota Vikings team total over 20.5. I think the Chargers' defensive regression the last couple weeks is real. They are dead last in the NFL the last 3 weeks in yards per play allowed. Their pass defense has gotten worse, not better as well. Sixth worst in that time. I think that Carson Wentz can at least get me to 21 tonight.
All right. Everybody, say goodbye to Stormy. Where are you going again?
Goodbye. I'm going to Salt Lake City this weekend, Colorado at Utah, nightcap on ESPN. Should be a pretty fun one, actually, I think.
I will say I enjoy doing the show with you since I moved on here. But again, I'm not your secretary. People can stop asking me every weekend where you're at.
Oh, is that a tweet you got or something?
It's every if I run into people, whatever it is, it's, oh, where's she at this weekend? I'm like, ask her.
Well, I will be on the show tomorrow for approximately 15 minutes.
There we go.
So that's good. I'll chime in. We'll give out a couple more best bets.
We'll stretch that out to 30.
Some NFL stuff I want to share. But thanks, everybody, for hanging with us. Coming up next, Follow the Money with Mitch and Paul.